Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Jenny Wren. I've been a festival booker for over 15 years, mom of two, four if you count the dogs. I've buried my sister and my parents, partied like it was 1999 for over 20 years, modelled for 5 minutes, worn far too many accessories and not enough self-care. I've had breast cancer and epiphanies. Safe to say, she's been around.
The last year, I think, or last, I'd say, since 2017, I think my life has changed drastically since then. And I think in hindsight, looking back, I think everything wasn't the way that I thought it was. And I'm only kind of really discovering who I am now as a person and being comfortable with myself now and kind of just beginning to learn who I am as opposed to who everyone else wants me to be. And that's been a really big thing for me in the last year. And I think I've kind of fallen off the radar a bit, but I've given myself more time to kind of learn more about myself, really, if that makes any sense at all. I think it's kind of, I feel like I didn't know myself for so long, because I felt like I was kind of trying to fit in with everybody, or I wanted everyone to like me and I wanted everyone to kind of, you know, see me as me, but I wasn't being me. And it took me a long time to realize that, I think. And I feel all the more better for figuring it out, but I feel like I'm just kind of at the beginning of it. I don't think there ever is an end, but I think it's just the beginning of kind of like, all right, it's like I'm in that space of where I'm seeing people for who they are as well, also as well as me, and kind of seeing, you know, who's there for me, who am I there for, like, and you know, has this person got my best interest at heart, or are they trying to use me? And it's been a kind of a whirlwind trying to figure out like how I work and how other people work, I think, in the last couple of years. And I think that's only come since my autism diagnosis. I was diagnosed in 2017. 2018 it was. So I think I felt like a ghost for a while. Like, so I was just kind of like floating around. Basically, people could see me, though. I was visible, but like people didn't really see me or know who I was. I think people have an idea of who I am, and they that's the person that they see online. But unfortunately, that's not really me. It's like one aspect probably of me. Like, it's not like, you know, fully me. Like, in the same sense, I suppose, that when I say that I'm autistic, it doesn't mean that I'm just autistic and that's all there is. Yeah, that's a funny one, because when I do say that, people assume that equals she's saying that's all she is, that's she's just, you know, autistic. But I think that's just one aspect of who I am. And I feel like when I got my diagnosis, I was kind of thrown into the spotlight a bit and I had to educate people on it, and I hadn't even educated myself. So I feel like I've done a lot of that in the last year as well.
Yeah, that's a great sort of the voyage of discovery, isn't it? It really is. And as you said, rightly, I think it is a life, for me, it will definitely be a lifelong journey, for sure. And I really resonate with a diagnosis or just finding that peace. I haven't gone for a test, but I definitely identify as ADHD or ADD. And it was like finding actually a piece of gold. I'll be honest with you. It was finally like a place to hang my hat, not live. Not, you know, as you say, identify, but definitely kind of go, oh my God, that makes so much sense now. It's like I can just, you know, rest. It was like I finally had the right map. Do you mind me asking how or why did you go for a diagnosis? What led you to that?
I think, well, first of all, it was a friend of mine who had come over. We were talking about like setting up a magazine or doing some kind of creative work together. And he was actually just talking about different things, saying, oh, well, I do this and I do this way. And I was like, oh, yeah, I do that too. I don't know anyone else who does it that way. That's gas. You're the first person I met and we were just talking like that. And then he actually suggested I go for an assessment because he thought that I was on the spectrum. And I was like, what's the spectrum? I had no idea what autism was or anything about it. To be honest with you, I was so naive. But I think I was only naive because of how it's presented in the media, because I never kind of went, oh, that's me. That light bulb never went off. So when I did, when he did say it to me, I was kind of like, what? I was like, fuck off. I'm not autistic. What are you talking about? I'm 27. Like, no, like by now, like, come on. Like, I'm a woman. Like, I'd know. And I didn't know. And it turns out that a lot of people don't know. They have a feeling, all right, of being different and kind of going, okay, well, there's something a bit off here. I'm not like everybody else. There's a, you know, I know that I'm different. I just don't know what it is. And I think for me, it was just to kind of understand myself a bit better, because I find others really hard to read. I find it hard to talk with other people, in the sense that like if I'm someone's friend, I find it hard to friend. I'm not really great at friending. I'm not really great at life in general outside my work, which is like would come as probably a surprise to most people, because it looks like I'm so organized elsewhere. But I'm really bad at life and understanding life. So I think that for me, it kind of helped me clear up so many things, like for how I'm, you know, quite bad in social situations. I might say the wrong thing and then I'll end up beating myself up over for like years, and that kind of like inner critic and all these kind of things just melded together. And I think it was just, I was told as well my whole life that I was stupid by everybody around me, by teachers, by everyone. And I think it was just, I knew deep down that I wasn't, and I knew I just kept fighting. I just kept going. I kept going. Like, no matter what anyone said to me, I was just like, no, I just know there's something there. I know I'm not what people say that I am. And that's kind of been a reoccurring theme throughout my life, where people assume that I'm one way, or assume that I'm another, or assume that I'm looking for attention and this, that, and the other. And I think it's kind of, I took all that on as well. And I kind of believed those things. I started to believe everything that people said about me. And it was only really in the last year, and since getting my diagnosis and going to counselling, actually, it was like I didn't realise I needed to go to counselling. That was, it was one thing getting my diagnosis and understanding myself, but then I had to deal with all these years of abuse and everything else that happened in between, and why it happened as well, like, and how I ended up in situations, and just working through all that, actually, kind of, I think it kind of gave me some, what's the word I'd be looking for here? It was such a relief to get my diagnosis, but it was an even bigger relief to work through everything that I had kind of just put to the back of my mind, because my diagnosis was nothing without having worked through everything else I worked through. And I learned that out very quick. It was like when I got my diagnosis, it was like this huge relief. I was like, oh, I finally understand what it is. And you know, I thought that like I didn't really need to deal with it. Anything else, I thought that was it. It's like, okay, I can move on with my life. I can kind of live a good life now. I'm going to be happy. That's all I need to know. So it was at the start of the pandemic, I went to counselling. And I actually went to counselling for my mum, because my mum passed away 8 years ago. My dad passed away then in 2017. And I had never dealt with it. I just kind of put it to the back of my mind and just threw myself into my work, really. So I think that that kind of, I went to counselling for that reason, but I ended up talking about a number of things that I didn't even realise that I needed to talk about. And I think that's probably quite similar for a lot of people. They just kind of tap into something. They're like, oh, I didn't know that was there. It's like, yeah.
Because you go in with yeah, you're pointing at this one thing, you think that's it, or this one person, or this one whatever, but actually you start beginning to peel away the onion skins and you're like, oh Christ. I mean, for me, I used to keep laughing, kind of going, oh shit, I'm sorry I opened that cupboard now. It's just oh no, like, oh God, are we back here again? I also undertook counselling, and it was, you know, funnily enough, this morning, driving back, I dropped the kids to school, and driving home, I was thinking, that's probably the best investment I've ever given myself. You know?
Yeah.
Because it takes, and when I say investment, obviously there's money, you know, there's a financial, because it's not cheap. So yeah, you have to stick to the financial, but there's a time commitment for yourself. There's the, like, you know, it's that feeling of, oh God, every week do I have to go to bloody counselling? And I would come up with all the excuses not to do it, knowing full well it's what I needed to do, which I still don't. I don't understand that human psyche. But anyway, but the time commitment and work has, for me, has been phenomenal. And I think I'm hearing that from you as well, because as you say, it's one thing to find out. It was more after that that I began to understand more about myself and reach the kind of, oh Christ, ADHD really fits how I work. But it's, yeah, it's one thing to have your diagnosis, but now it's like, right, I have a map and I need somebody to help me navigate and get rid of some of the crap that I've been carrying, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of us, like, don't realise that we're carrying so much of it as well. I think that's another, like, I definitely didn't. I absolutely didn't think that I was carrying half the stuff that I was carrying, but I was, you know. Mm. Sorry, what were you going to say there?
I was going to say, is that something that you found, like, yeah, that for you, it just, you, as you say, you started with one thing, you know, maybe your diagnosis or actually grief, and I'm sorry about your mom.
I had met my real dad, funnily enough, a couple of years ago, and that was great. I got to meet him for the first time, so it was cool. My nana and my auntie, they live in the UK. So I'm still quite close with my auntie, and I just found out, I'll tell you a bit about my cousin now in a minute, bizarre kind of, found out I have another cousin last year. So my family's kind of getting bigger as it's getting smaller. So it's kind of like bittersweet, really, I suppose.
That's
so
wonderful.
Yeah, I'm an auntie now as well. So it's kind of like,
That's so cool. Yeah. And for you, the diagnosis definitely sounds like, you know, it was not a starting point. You'd already, you know, you were already 27. You were in the world, you were in your life, you were in your work. But it just offered you some answers for how you worked in the world.
Yeah. And it almost gave me a toolkit to kind of like begin to understand myself and understand how I do things and why I do things a certain way, instead of beating myself up for doing them those ways. Yeah. Because I think a lot of people on the spectrum would relate to the fact that, like, when you do things a certain way, when you're a child, you're told not to. Even if you're playing with toys a certain way, you're told, like, that's not the way you play with toys. And it's so evident looking back now at my childhood that, like, all the signs are there. But just in the early 90s, I suppose, that, like, no one was looking for autism in girls. Like, so, but, like, I used to line up all my Polly Pockets, and I'd play with, like, Street Shark and Biker Mice. They were, like, my favourite toys. But then as soon as I went to primary school, I started playing with Bratz dolls, and I don't even think I liked them. I think I just played with them because everyone else had them, and it made me kind of feel like, oh, well, we have this one thing in common. Like, and I feel like I just followed that kind of form then for up until pretty much, I'd say, like, in the last year or two. It's only really that I've kind of settled into myself and go, no, it's, I'm kind of, I remember when I went to counselling first, I went in and I was so adamant that I, you know, this is my last time trying this because I haven't had good experiences before. I'd literally went to counsellors and they'd give me presents and stuff, and I wasn't, it just didn't seem like a professional environment, and I just, I wasn't getting anything from it other than me kind of just spilling my guts out. Mm. I wasn't learning anything, or kind of, you have to find the right person, I suppose. But I remember when I went in first, and she was like, oh, and who are you, kind of thing, you know. She asked me the question, and I was like, I remember, so this is only going back a year ago, and I went in, I was like, oh, I'm Aoife Dooley, and I do this, I'm an illustrator, I'm an author, and I do this and this and this, and I was so like, you know, this is all who I am. And she's like, but that's your work though, who are you? And it was such a profound question for me that I was like, do you know what? I said in my head, I was like, I don't fucking know. I have no idea who I am. I have no idea who I am, because every aspect of my life is based around what other people want me to do, or what they like, or what I think they like. And it was the first time that I actually questioned it and said, oh, I was like, well, that's not good. I was like, that's probably why I'm so stressed all the time. I'm living up to other people's standards or other people's needs, and I'm completely forgetting about my own. So I spent like pretty much the last year exploring who I am and like what it is that I love to do and what I like. So I've started playing games again because I love video games.
Video games, okay. Yeah,
love all that kind of stuff. And, I'd stopped playing for a while, but I'm very nerdy. Very nerdy. I think I tried to hide that as well from people because I just wanted to kind of come across maybe cool. Because I think when you are in the spotlight, you have to have a kind of an image as such. But my image was kind of just made up of, I think, just what other things people said about me and stuff. Like, you know, sure, my whole comedy set was based around that. It was based around, like, you know, people thinking that I was a lesbian for years. And it was kind of, it was never what I thought, you know, that way. So it's kind of, it was such a strange feeling to kind of go, God, I thought I was so confident that I knew who I was. And I actually had no idea anything like about myself outside my work, what I liked or, you know.
It's amazing how far we can go in life. And as you say, you know, that is a profound question. And it is interesting when, yeah, somebody answers with, yeah, I'm this. And I'm, you know, I always used to joke years ago in the 90s, I'm much older than you. There was like this flip from, you know, DJ model. You're like, oh, fuck off. You know, like you're wheeling out all these things. Yeah. But like, but what do you like? Like, who are you? And, you know, like, yeah, we can get caught up in identities of what it is we do,
totally.
Which is even like even this the concept for this podcast for me was like, you know, yeah, we can present ourselves publicly or we, you know, or somebody's worth is attached to how successful they are. But like, what is success? Do you know what I mean? And like,
absolutely, it's kind of linear. Like, it's like, yeah, it's you know what I mean. Success can be anything. Like, it's not
absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah. And so, but to get behind that, like, I'm always more interested in kind of pulling back the curtain and behind the scenes and who's pulling the strings. Who's, you know, where's the Wizard of Oz in there? Where, like, what's going on? You know, I find that very interesting. And what leads people to their work and to what they become exemplary at, and like. So obviously, you have incredible work out in the world. Where did that start? Were you just always like noodling away, or it sounds like you had a like you mentioned earlier? Sorry, this is a three part question. Now I'm jumping all over the place, but you said that, you know, you were told you were stupid, and yet here you are. That's massive. Like to rally against.
Yeah, it's like I think as a child, though, I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew that I didn't feel right and people were making me feel really bad.
Okay.
And I didn't really understand at the time. It's only now. And that's what's so hard about counseling, I suppose, is when you are working through this thing, it's like, it's not that you're feeling it again for the first time because you've already experienced it. But I suppose you're re-experiencing it from an adult point of view, yeah, as opposed to it being a child. And that's been a big kind of thing for me. Because I felt very much still that small child up until like I started going to counseling during the pandemic, because I was always trying to protect myself. So that's why whenever anything happened in the media where people were like harassing me or anything, that's why I reacted the way I did. It wasn't like, you know, I kind of maybe felt a bit like, or looked a bit unhinged, but it was because it reminded me of all the other things I'd faced in my past. But like, no one else knew that. To everyone else, I just looked crazy. And that was really hard. And I think that, it just, I don't know how I think what happened was I found my own kind of little like nook. So I'd spend a lot of time in my room. I did have loads of video games growing up, which was, I thought I had the life of Riley. I was like, oh, look at this new console I have. Look at this. But in hindsight, looking back, I think that those were just bought for me to keep me in my room because I was annoying. And I swear to God, like it's, yeah. Like the way you see any child who's like, just like annoying, like you just give them a tablet, same thing. It's like, you know, and I think that's what that was. And then in that kind of environment, I started to draw and just learned to do different things. Drawing was always a big thing for me. I loved drawing comics and just writing about what was going on. I have a big box of diaries there behind me with like drawings in them and just things I experienced from ages 12 up to 17. So sometimes I go through them as well, just to remind me like, okay, this is what I was like before. And this is what I was like at this age. And sometimes they're hard to go through because I can see how far I've come, but also how much I've gone through and how much I kept to myself for such a long time without kind of working through it. Like, and I feel like I'm kind of have to give myself a little gift now for working through it. But I think the drawing was definitely, drawing's always been a massive part of my life because I used it to communicate as well. I felt like I couldn't really use my words properly. I was never nonverbal now, but I think it's hard to believe me being nonverbal now at all because I talk so much. But I don't think I was ever nonverbal, but I definitely had speech problems and I found it hard to communicate how I was feeling. So I used to draw how I was feeling and stuff like that. And I always use drawing as a tool to kind of express myself. So that was kind of, and it's only years later I found out that drawing is a form of stimming. It's like a regulating thing. So you're regulating your emotions if you're overwhelmed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah.
So I think it's kind of, I think I was drawn all the time because I was so stressed out. But then I learned that that was something that calmed me down because anything else I'd done outside of that, I was told to stop. If I was shaking my leg, if I was biting my nails, anything I was doing to try and soothe myself, like I was told, no, that's, you know, you can't do that. Or you can't walk that way. There's nothing wrong with you. And I'm like, well, that's just the way I walk. I'm sorry. It's just like, so like stuff like that. And I think, I think that, it just like looking back, drawing is one of the only things that I've kind of probably fully carried through on because it did help me so much in my life. And just to kind of, you know, it's you know, drawing's kind of just one of those things that like, you know, I know I can do if I'm having a bad day or it's always been there. It's not going anywhere, you know what I mean? So.
When you look back at the kid there, I suppose, you know, it was your own form of self-help, really, wasn't it, in a way? You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely it was. And I didn't even realise. I think we do so many things when we're younger that we don't realise that really helps ourselves or we're trying to protect ourselves. So I don't think we really kind of know until we get older and kind of tap back into it when we're ready and realise, oh, OK, that was a really tough time. And yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's what I did to kind of like get through it, I suppose, in that way. And I think it only kind of opened all back up when I started working on my latest book as well, because it was a graphic novel and it's like, you know, I'm looking at these pictures, but I'm also writing the words. It was from a time in my life that was a very dark time when I was 11 years old. There was so much going on. I was like being bullied in school, inside school, outside school, everywhere. I had no kind of escape. And I feel like I never really dealt with any of that. I kind of like disassociated from it. So I felt like when I was doing, when I was working on Frankie's World, I was tapping back into these things without even realizing. And then I kind of said, okay, there's something kind of, I have to go, I'm feeling really bad. I have to go to counseling now. Like, and that's kind of what happened. And I thought it was just, I was feeling really bad because the time of the year was my mom's anniversary. But it actually wasn't. It was all those things I experienced, the bullying and stuff like that. Like I felt like I hadn't worked through any of it. I just kind of completely disassociated from it in my mind. So whatever ended up popped up in my head, it was like, oh, that's not me. That's somebody else. I'm watching this happen to somebody else. And that's kind of like, yeah. So it was kind of like a big, it was like ripping a plaster off really quick. But the wound kind of hadn't healed. So it kind of felt like that a bit for, I think, having talked about it and talking through some of the things that kind of kept popping up in my head, like from things I remembered as a kid, even just talking about them and saying them out loud and looking at them from an adult lens, it kind of, I don't think about them anymore. And that's kind of been really, that's been really nice, I think, to kind of work through stuff like that. But then also to see, wow, there's other kids out there who have probably experienced this, and this book is probably going to help them in that way because they probably experienced, like, you know, being bullied or, you know, that kind of thing. And I think there was just a part of me was like, okay, I have to put this aside for a minute because I have to kind of work through some of my stuff before I can write something like this because I wanted to be true to my story and kind of what happened.
So the book, yeah, I mean, I'd imagine something like that when you're, it's cathartic, but you would need support nearly while doing it.
Yeah, it's like I didn't really know because I hadn't written anything of that kind of length before. And I hadn't written a story like that. Like, so it was kind of, yeah, it was like I was kind of like diving back deep into like my childhood, and I kind of didn't realize there was no warning signs before, and I was kind of like, okay, didn't know this was going to happen, I'm going to have to talk to someone now. But it was like, at the time I said, like, I didn't even realize that was what was making me feel that way while I was working on it. There was parts of it that like were really hard to write with, like, for example, my mom had a hair condition all her life. So all I knew her was, it's like she was sick all the time. We couldn't really do anything. She's done loads now. She was going to the gym. Like, you would never think that there was anything wrong. Yeah. But like, you know, there'd be times when she'd be in hospital and stuff like that. Like, and I remember going to Disneyland for one of my birthdays one year, and my mom nearly died of pneumonia, like, and she'd stay in the hotel room. So there's all these kind of, and I hadn't dealt with any of that and how, what it was like growing up as a child with a sick mom. And I think that, like, even all those things, it almost in a way, I know this sounds really cheesy, but almost in a way saved me, because I think if I hadn't have written that, I probably wouldn't have, would have never thought that I had to talk about it or deal with it. Yeah. It was just kind of like, do you know what I mean? Like, it was there was no other reason for me to bring it up, like, or talk about it. Like, there's no other reason for me to go back so deeply into the intro and re-experience it. Mm. So it kind of, in a way, it was, it felt like it was kind of a really big realization, and kind of almost like giving myself a hug.
That's what I hear. Yeah. And I think, I don't know if this is the same for you, but for me, some of the stuff that not even just came up in counselling, but, you know, that has come up for me over the years, I used to feel kind of, how do I put it? Not like an asshole, but kind of like an asshole going, but for God's sake, like, I was loved and I was fine. But, you know, without really just letting myself feel sad for that thing that I found very difficult as a child, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wasn't in an abusive family. I was, you know, but there were certain things I did find really, really hard. But because they almost weren't like hard enough, you know, they weren't.
That's it. That's,
you know, that you kind of just brushed aside.
I don't know if it's an Irish thing or if it's just a thing in general, but what I kind of realized was, I was told I was so lucky my whole life. Mm. You're so lucky. You're so lucky. You don't know how good you have it. You're so lucky. And now as an adult looking back, I was anything but lucky. Anything but lucky looking back at the thing. Now, there were some great things in my life, don't get me wrong. Like, I had, like, you know, my mom was like a lovely mom. She'd do anything for me. But like, she was so sick growing up as a child. She didn't have many friends. So she didn't know how to mom, like, the way I didn't know to life. So there was a lot of things there. And I think that, like, I just kind of accepted my life because I was told how lucky I was. Mm. And, you know, you don't know how lucky you were. I had tits when I was 8. That is not lucky. That is not lucky. That is, like, horrible. I was not only a commodity, like, mentally, I was a commodity, like, physically as well. Like, I was not lucky. Do you know what I mean? And I think just accepting that as an adult and saying, no, you had a really hard time. You were not lucky. You were really unfortunate at that time, and that was what happened. It was really, really shitty. But, like, you know, you're here now.
Yeah, we're okay.
You're okay, but, like, yeah, like, you know, that happened. Mm. And it's okay that happened, but, like, you know, you just need to kind of, I don't want to say accept it, because it's something that's always going to be there, because these kind of situations and these things mold you into who you are as well. So it's kind of like, I was just kind of acknowledging it more so than anything else, because I hadn't acknowledged it before, because I thought that I didn't need to, because I was told I was so lucky. I took it as face value, you know, that way. Mm. And there was a lot of things I had to change as well. Like, you know, I had to reflect on myself as a person, like, you know, and it wasn't all about the things that had happened to me. It was about things maybe that I had done to other people in the space where I felt so bad. You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't, like, I was cutting myself off from people, not talking to people, find it very hard to trust people, and all these things are making other people feel bad then as well within that. So it was kind of, it's been like a real eye-opener in a way. But I just turned 30 too, so I don't know if this is like some secret code that happens when you turn 30 and, like, you see everything for the first time. I don't know. That's how it feels.
I'm a bit of a hippie, so definitely 27, 28, there's the whole Saturn return story. I don't know if you've heard of that, where you so you have this kind of realization, I can only say it in a Northern Irish accent, where it's Saturn comes back in a very strong way. So you do, a lot of people do start a kind of voyage of exploration, 27, 28. 30s, Yeah, I mean, look, with every year, with every decade, for me, it is, you know, even when I look back at my 30s, which now feels like a fucking long time ago, you know, I kind of thought I had myself pretty sorted or pretty steady. And Jesus, yeah. It now feels like me looking back at a child, you know, like there was, but I hadn't gone full deep like you had. I hadn't gone into a full, you know, counselling. You know, it's taken me until my 40s to twig that there was, you know, an ism or a whatever that a diagnosis would have helped me. And it was actually watching an Instagram flipping reel thing from Mel Robbins, and she put up something about women with, and I was like, oh my God, she's just explained me completely. So, you know, it took somebody else on fucking Instagram for me to go there.
What was that like? See, because I was told someone said it to me. So what was it like for you randomly just scrolling and seeing someone like that? Whoa.
It was a real light bulb moment, but I think I was able to recognize it because I had done the work. I had done a lot of work. I had done the 2 years of counseling. I had a breast cancer diagnosis nearly 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and that was a kind of like, okay, pivotal. You know, changed my diet. I had to kind of come off the booze in a sense. Like, not that I was a boozer, but I was a partier. I mean, I'm a mom, so you know, it was pretty balanced. So it was kind of, I've explained that as that I was literally sitting in the cold soup of myself. There was no fucking way out of this. You had to just face this mother down, you know? So part of that was like, okay, change your diet, but you got to change what's going on in your head. You can't. And I've lived with a huge self-critic all my life. Like I've killed myself metaphorically thousands of times.
No,
it's brutal.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, it's brutal. So I think because I had done the counseling, I was able to kind of see myself better. I was able to hold myself better. So I could see something like that and go, oh my God, that's me, as opposed to, oh fuck, is that me? And you're terrible. And you're, you know, I had a different voice.
I totally get you. And I think sometimes we're meant to see. Yeah, I totally get you. And I think that sometimes these things just come upon us. We're meant to see them, or it's meant to happen.
Absolutely.
I definitely believe in that stuff as well.
They're going to keep coming at you in different ways until you've done the work, or until you're able to see it, what's that little game with the guy, and is it Mario and you click a thing, or Pac-Man? It's like you're going to keep bumping
against. It's probably Mario just jumping up in the boxes.
You know, it's kind of like that. You're going to keep going around the same level until you can kind of bing, and then, okay, you're up into this next level. That's kind of my view stuff.
No, it is. It's kind of like almost watching a movie, and then you're like, oh, I really enjoyed that. And you watch it a second time and you notice so much more that you didn't notice in the first time around watching. I think it's kind of, that's what it kind of feels like, because it's been like, I love all that stuff as well, I have to say, because I kind of look out for those signs.
That's a really good way of putting it, actually, isn't it? The movie, because it is, with the second time round, you notice the guy in the background, or the nuance of something else, or that's a very good way of putting it. So with every year, definitely 30s, you are, and you're settling more into yourself for sure.
That's it. I definitely feel more comfortable with myself in the last year. But then I'm also kind of anxious going back out into the world again, because I don't think people will recognize me. Well, they'll recognize me physically probably, but like mentally, like I feel like I'm completely different. But I think that, I really like all that stuff as well, because I've been looking out for signs when my mom and dad died. And a lot of people would kind of like would think, oh, Jesus, this is so mad, like angel bollocks or something like that. But I swear, like I've experienced some weird things that like cannot be explained. And that's the reason why I'm kind of like, okay, I'm looking out for them now, because I had that kind of initial thing where I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Why did that happen? One of the biggest things that happened last year was when I had literally just signed to do this book deal. I got a call from my auntie, and she's like, Aoife, answer your phone. And I thought someone died, and I was like, oh, because that's usually what happens. Like, it's just the last 10 years have been intense. It's just like deaths everywhere. So I was like, oh no, like who now, kind of thing. And she goes, you have a cousin. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, my brother had a baby before he died, and I never knew, and they just found me on Facebook, and his name is Frankie. the same, like, as my, like, yeah, there's been so many weird,
I've just got tingles.
Like,
oh my God.
So many strange things like that that have happened, that, like, I just can't, it's too much almost to be a coincidence sometimes. And yeah, like, it kind of, I do kind of feel like they're there in some way. And they
absolutely
have my back. Yeah, it's a weird thing. I think it's like you experience it when someone like passes away, but it's kind of, it's weird. I wouldn't be talking about it to everyone because, you know, they've got her like, oh Jesus, she's saying the numbers again. She's gone mad. Like, do you know what I mean? But like, I think it's a comfort thing as well, though. It really is. Like, it's like, if I do, like, number 28 is the one for me. So if I see that, like, I know, like, I'm onto a good thing, or it's going to be a good day. And it's a ridiculous thing, but it's comfort, though, I think.
It's
comfort. I think that's what it is, but yeah.
It is comfort, but, you know, I don't like to, you know, comfort can sound like, oh, it's just a nice little blanket, you know. Like, I definitely believe in energies, and, you know, sometimes when I'm lost or stuck, you know, I used to say when I was younger, I had this light. I kind of had this light, this guiding light. I didn't know what it was, but it was sort of just, I don't know, something. And when I lose that light, you kind of have to go, okay, I need to like call in, I don't know, call in the guides, call in the spirits, call in, you know, there could be magic mushrooms to fairies to whatever it is you believe. But there's definitely spirits and or energies around us if we can tap into it without going full hippie. But, no, you know, I'm a big believer in it.
I think so as well. I've seen the power of like how your life can change in one day. I've seen that. I've experienced that firsthand. And it, like, in a crazy way. Like, I remember, this is actually like a bit of a mad story, but like, I remember it's 2017, I think my dad had just died, and my family didn't really know my dad because he lived in the UK. So everyone kind of just acted like normally because they weren't really close to him. They didn't really know him. But it kind of almost felt like it didn't even happen. It was so hard to deal with because I had no one really to talk to. And I just had never felt that low. It didn't seem that way because I was out gigging, I was doing like Vodafone Comedy Festival, doing all these things, but like, I never felt so low. And it was only when I went to counselling, I think it was like on a Thursday or something. I had to actually go down to my nana, and I just started bursting out crying because I felt like I was really crying out for attention and nobody could see it. I had all the signs and I was really trying to tell people how I was feeling, but I couldn't. And I told my nana like that, I was like, oh, I want to kill myself. I don't want to be here. Like, I hate myself. I hate my life. I have nobody. Like, I hate it. And I went to counselling that evening, I think it was. We found someone really quick. And then the next day, I went and done a gig in Bray Comedy Festival that I probably wasn't even ready to do, but I just said, I'm going to do it. I just put myself under so much pressure. Like, it's unbelievable looking at it now. But that night, I got this place. That night, like, I got, like, someone was at my gig. A woman who had been following me, and she seen that I was looking for a place to live, and her husband was there, and they offered me this place, and it gave me the kind of space I needed to kind of heal in a way, and then also figure out, like, you know, get my own independence and stuff like that. But like, that's how quickly that changed in a day. And I think that's it kind of showed me that, like, in a way, it was just like, no, don't do that, like, you know, tomorrow could be different. It's like that Blink-182 song. It's like Adam's song. That's what that's about. It's like, tomorrow holds much better days. And that's kind of, it's hard at the time to see it that way. But I think that's kind of what I've been doing my whole life, just like hoping that tomorrow will be better. And sometimes it's not, and that's okay. But I think the good days kind of, you know, I'm trying to focus on them more. I think a lot of people don't understand autism and like how draining it can be as well. Like, to be in, you know, to be doing the things that I was doing, I was exhausted a lot of the time. Like, I was mentally drained and physically drained. And I think that, like, there was no kind of leeway there. Like, we all talk about mental health in this country and how important it is, but then we don't actually
understand.
Act on it.
Yeah.
We don't act on it or understand it. Like, we treat people like so badly who are experiencing it. And then, like, when something does happen, we're like, oh, why did that happen? It's like, I think we all need to kind of look at the people in our lives more and see those signs and kind of, you know what I mean? Like, because I don't think anyone's seen with me, not that it was their job to, but I think the most important thing was that I seen it in me. So I could kind of finally do something about it. But as I said, though, I'm still kind of right in the middle of it. I'm not like, and I think I will be going through it for the rest of my life. But I think Absolutely. That it's, I'm, yeah, yeah. I think I'm going through the stage where it's like, I'm accepting it now and I'm accepting myself. And that feels really nice because it just feels like I'm being nice to myself, like the adult that like I didn't have. Yeah. I'm kind of just being that person to myself, small child now, if that makes any sense.
I completely, like, you're singing my song because I've always felt like the child. I've never felt adult, and I am an adult. Like, I've two, you know, I'm adulting. I've, you know, two teenage kids. I'm sitting in a house that we own. Like, you know, I've the dog that you heard barking. I'm cooking dinner. It's like I'm kind of, you know, but also waiting for somebody to go, you out, you haven't a fucking clue what you're doing. But there's, and I think was it at the start of my counselling, or maybe it was my friend Tracy, I'm not sure. And but I know I got to that realisation myself, that we have to parent ourselves. We have to parent that inner child.
Absolutely.
You know, and while you may have gotten a diagnosis, which helps that, just what you said there, accepting yourself, that's what would bring a smile to my face, because that takes fucking work and it takes a lot. And, you know, when you read these, or like L'Oreal, because you're worth it, or like have a self-care day and people telling you to take a bath. Jesus Christ, that's not it at all.
No.
Like, it's so much deeper. And that level of actually just accepting yourself, and it frees up so much. You're able to accept other people and their you know, wonky bits and how they've shown up our ways, you know.
Exactly. It's like opening up yourself to the world again after shutting yourself off from it. Like, I think like a lot of people do that in different ways and don't realize that they've done it. I think I definitely didn't. I think it's I think even does that as well. It's just kind of, I think it's opened up loads of possibilities. Like, I went camping for the first time last year with friends. And I've never had friends in my life. Like, literally, wow. I've had acquaintances. I've had a lot of people who've tried to be my friends because of where I am and trying to just use me. But I've never had solid friends. And that's been very difficult. And that's one of the reasons I would have went for, like, to look into it as well, because I'm like, why can't I connect with people? And that was like the best day of my life. Wow. Just going camping. And I was like, wow, this is what it's like to have friends. And that would have never probably happened, only for I opened myself back up to the world, going counseling and kind of going, no, I am worth it. I deserve this little road trip. I deserve to go. Like, why not? Like, you know. And I think I was just stopping myself from doing a lot of things because I felt like I didn't deserve it, or I didn't, you know, I wasn't worth it, or other people wouldn't think that I was worth it, or didn't, you know, they're only asking me because they pity me. And I just kind of put all that stuff in a box. And kind of almost like, I don't want to say I flush it down the toilet because that would mean that it's gone, but like I kind of just put it to the side. It's still kind of there and stuff pops up out of it every once in a while, but like at least I know how to kind of put my foot on it now. Just kind of
and recognize
keep it closed,
it, you know,
in that way. Yeah, that's what
recognize it,
yeah.
Really, because, you know, I remember even now, like, I can have a hard time kind of, you know, when somebody said, well, you know, how are you feeling? Like, I don't fucking know how I'm feeling.
Oh, that's like, that's the story of my life. I'm just like, I don't know.
Probably not great, but I couldn't tell you, you know, like the differentiation between anger and fear. And I don't know, or like it came up in one counseling session for me that I was potentially holding a lot of fear. I was like, it's not even a word I know how to spell. Like, it's not a word I would have in my vocabulary a lot or talk about. And yet my reactions to, you know, what I was explaining, she was like, that's fear. That's based in fear. It was like, oh my God, I need to kind of sit down and, you know, pinpoint the emotion. So when you mentioned that, it's like, yeah, just even recognizing that that's coming up, so you understand it yourself and you're not immediately blaming the person, the situation, or yourself again, that you can just go, oh, that's what's coming up for me. That's okay. I know what to do here, you know?
Yeah, I think that's such a game changer for everybody when they realize that as well, because it's kind of like, I know for me anyway, I didn't understand my emotions. I still don't most of the time. Like, I really don't. But I think there was like times when I'd be walking around the house going, I'm tired. And I'd be just saying to myself, and I wasn't tired. I was feeling something completely different and I didn't realize. It was only when I tapped into it, I'm like, no, that's how I'm feeling. It's so funny how we can just kind of, I suppose, assume we know how we're feeling, or like be so like ignorant towards the fact that, no, I'm feeling this way, without giving it a second thought when you're feeling a complete other way, and not even kind of giving yourself a second to acknowledge it. Like,
totally,
you know,
I mean, I've gone through years like that, you know, and you're kind of plowing on a bit like you dragging yourself back to Bray. You're plowing on with the thing. And yet I do feel maybe the 20s, that's what we have to do. Like, I do think, you know, in your 20s, you're actually more like just a bigger teenager, and that energy, enthusiasm and work, you have the ability and the energy to physically do it. And then at some point you are spat out going, okay, this isn't sustainable. What's going on? And you kind of have to reflect. So maybe it is just the natural way of the world in terms of our age on the planet.
Yeah.
But interesting. And tell me a little bit more about Frankie's world. So you found out that you have, this is the, so he's a cousin and the book. And have you met the cousin?
I haven't met him in real life, but I've met him over, like, we do like video calls and stuff like that. Like, and I've met his fiance at the same, like, over video calls. But they live in, I think it's called King's Inn in the UK, or King's Lynn, actually.
King's
it's
Lynn,
called.
Yeah.
King's Lynn, King's Inn, what am I talking about?
That's
but,
all right.
He's lovely. We have so much in common. He even has a Pikachu tattoo, or of Pokemon. So we're like the exact same person. It's gas.
Oh my God.
They're very similar, very similar. And he's really cool. He collects antique stuff and sells it on. So he has all this really kind of weird gothic stuff. And like, I loved like that stuff growing up. So we seem to be very similar. So I'm really looking forward to meeting him. And I found another cousin, a distant cousin last year, who I was looking through their family tree and ancestry. And I found out that they worked in animation for over 30 years. So that was really cool as well.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, just like finding like different people. But the Frankie thing, he just popped up out of nowhere. That was amazing though, because, you know.
But your book was already out in the world.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't written. It had been signed. The name and all for the book had been picked already. Like,
wow.
that was all there. And then it was literally my auntie called me and she's like, you have a cousin. Like, and I was like, what? And it was just the most bizarre feeling. And I was like, okay. And it kind of made me feel like, okay, I'm probably onto something good if this is like a sign, because this is some kind of sign. Like, you know, this is kind of, it's a bit bizarre. And
it is. It's wonderful. Like something like that, I think, would help me to feel, shit, I need to trust all of this a lot more. Like, do you know what I mean? You know, trust this. I don't know. Like, I'm making gestations with my hands. I don't know the universe,
but there was,
or the what, you know, like.
It was so strange though, because I ended up, I was watching, like, the video would be like 11:11. Or like I'd wake up, it'd be 11 or 11. It was all around that time. I did notice that now. And I was like, okay. And at the time I was like, it took me years to kind of go, oh, maybe there is something in that, because it does seem so bizarre and almost crazy. But like, I think that there is, because I really feel it now, how special the book is, because it kind of like, it felt like I was waiting like for a big part of my life to be able to do that. So I could help other people, because people have always, even though I haven't had many friends, a lot of people have always come to me asking me for advice, or asking me, you know, oh, what do I do here, or and some personal things, like people who I wouldn't really know very well. So I think that, like, with this, I had to learn how to help myself first, and because I've learned the tools, or I have the tools now to help myself, and, you know, I'm still working through it, I think that, like, I was able to write Frankie's World and be able to help other kids maybe who are going through bullying, and, you know, with just that experience of not knowing who you are and knowing that you're different, and you just don't know why. It's such a confusing feeling, especially when you're a kid, because there's so much of the world you don't understand. So it's kind of
huge.
That's what the book is about. It's basically about, like, this little girl who is trying to find her way in life, and she's trying to find out who she is, and she goes on an adventure with her best friend, Sam, who's different too, and she uses a wheelchair. So she's the two of them, like, are just, you know, they're like just best mates. And I think it's kind of like a coming of age story of just like finding yourself and who you are and accepting yourself almost. And kind of, I think that's been a big thing in the last year for me. It's just self-acceptance instead of like beating myself down. I think that's kind of been a huge thing for me. And I'd love to kind of be able to show that to other kids, like, it's okay to be different, because I couldn't see any books when I was a kid that, like, even had those words in it, that it's okay to be like you, or like, it's so, and there was no one I could relate to. So I think that it's like I think it feels like, in a way, I don't want to put everything on this one thing, but it feels like a lot of things I experienced in my life have led up to this moment.
Yeah.
That's how it feels. It honestly does feel that way. I know it's so cheesy, but it feels
I mean, I as you're saying it, I completely agree with you, and that this is, but also, you know, with any, dare I say it, pregnancy, there's a, you know, it's a gestation. It's, do you know what I mean? There's a growth within before you can birth it out to the world, which also sounds super fucking cheesy and, you know, hippie and all of that. But do you know what I mean?
No, I totally get you.
That's exactly what it is. There's the inner growth, the inner work, the turmoil, the fucking morning sickness. Like, do you know what I mean? It's the same thing. Like, even the festival work, I've explained putting on the music, or like, you know, the lineup every year was like, you know, and then you birthed the thing during the summer, and then you were back into the, you know, like it takes that inner work, and to be in a place to put something like that out in the world and to put it out authentically and with, you know,
absolutely,
and as you
yeah.
say, having done the work yourself, you're able to hold the space for what that might open up for, because more people might come to you or.
So it's like, how could I help other people when I hadn't even helped myself as well? Like,
exactly.
You know, I want to be able to help other people, but like, I really needed to help myself first. I needed to take the space and time for myself to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sometimes even being honest with, you know, I get a little bit kind of like, you know, when you see so many people, I want to serve and I just want to be of service. They're like, for fuck's sake, we're egotistical humans. Do you know what I mean? Mostly I'd like to quite help myself first. And then in doing that, it turns out actually I can pass that on now, you know? So
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So Frankie's World, where that's a pre-order now, though, when I look at your website, that's.
It's pre-order. So it's not out until the 6th of January.
Wow.
I don't know when this is going out, but I can say it's out or it's not out, depending on when you're putting this out. So
I'd say this might go out early January, but
okay. Well, then I'll just say it's out on January 6th anyway, so we can kind of,
You'll have to, celebrate yourself in some way. Do you know what I mean? You'll have to, like, that really requires a proper pause moment for you, doesn't it? Just to go, wow, you know, because that has taken much more than sitting down, drawing a picture and, you know, it's a lot.
It was even just the process of trying to figure out, how do I do this? I've never done something like this before. Like, so there was so much work involved in it. I think it definitely warrants some kind of celebration. So I'll definitely be having some kind of celebration in January now. I don't know what kind it will be, but we'll see. It might be over Zoom, or it might be we'll see.
God, I think I could sit chatting to you all afternoon, Aoife. Do you know what I mean? I'd say
we're having a great talk.
We definitely need to have pints or herbal tea, whatever we're into these days, because it's so interesting. And thank you for opening up so honestly and you know, vulnerably, really. You know, it's not easy to do. Like, it isn't, but in doing it it is that whole story of self-acceptance and you're putting out a more whole sort of person then, really, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. No, totally. It's like, it's funny because anytime I do a podcast after, I'd be like, oh God, what did I say? And I'd be calling up after going, can you take that out? Can you change that? And I'm not really like that anymore because I trust myself more as well. It's like that as well. That's I don't know if you feel that, but I think that's kind of a huge thing as well. It's just trusting in yourself.
Well, just trusting that also, like, fuck it. You know, if I said it, I said it, and maybe it was meant to, or, you know, unless it was a real clanger, like, you know.
Clanger, it's gas.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one in ages.
Oh, yeah, I love the word clanger. And I can definitely make those. But I think it's part of, it's because it's new territory, that self-acceptance piece, that you're just like, you're more at ease. But that's what I put out. That's okay. That's what I said right there and then, you know, and that's who I am today. And tomorrow I'm going to be different again. And in 10 years, I'm going to be different again, hopefully. You know, I don't want to stay
the
same. I have three very short questions that were part of the series. They're not left off center or anything. Is there anything you're sorry you didn't start earlier?
I'd say listening to myself. Listening to myself and trusting myself. Because I listen to too many other people around me when it was myself that I should have been listening to, I think, as well.
Mm.
I wish I had started doing that earlier, because
that's a really good, Really good answer. And is there anything you're sorry you didn't give up earlier?
That one's a hard one. Oh God. I feel like there's a lot of things that I feel like I'm sorry I didn't give up earlier. I think probably beating myself up and being so hard on myself. Mm. Like literally like putting, like I had my own foot on my head almost.
Yeah.
Now I'm not that flexible, but you can see the image. Like it's just like, yeah. I literally.
Metaphorically.
Yeah. I was like scrunching my own face into the ground almost because I was so abrasive with myself. So I think that like, yeah, I definitely think that, that could have been different if I had have allowed myself for it to be. Mm.
And what are you most proud of to date?
I think the fact that I'm probably still here.
Mm.
I think that's probably one of the biggest things. It's like I can say that I'm really proud of my work that I've achieved, but I think the biggest work I've done is on myself. So I think that's kind of, that I'm still here.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm really glad you gave that answer. Yeah, because it is, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much, Aoife. This was total joy and just absolute joy. What a pleasure to meet you and thank you for your time.
You too.
And I'll be pre-ordering your book and looking forward to seeing all the great things you do. It's wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And come find me over in Hindsight Conversations on Twitter and Instagram.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.